Okay, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers, what the fuck buddies, what the fucksters, what the fuck nicks, what the fuck nears, what the fuck buddies? Nice to be in your head. I appreciate you welcoming me into your brain in a very direct and immediate fashion, usually. Today on the show, Sir Nick Frost is here. Sir Nick, he's not a sir. Nick Frost is here. I know many of you know him from his partnership with Simon Pegg and Edgar Wright, both of whom have been on this show. He's going to be in this. He's got a new animated film, The Box Trolls, opens in theaters this Friday on the 26th, the day before my birthday. The day before my birthday is the 27th, and at my birthday, I will be at LA Podfest. That's right. You can get the package deal. You can do all kinds. You know, come down. There's a lot of podcasts. I'm going to be appearing on the Aisha Tyler's podcast on that Friday, the 26th. I'll be doing a podcast on Saturday, the 27th, my birthday. You can actually go to lapodfest.com, and if you click on the live link, it will allow you to buy a weekend stream to see the festival, and I believe there's still tickets available. You can go to lapodfest.com and get all that stuff. I'm going to be doing, who's on my show so far? Shelby Farrow, Whitney Cummings, Amber Preston, Desi Jadakin. I hope I'm pronouncing her name right. Maybe one other person, but that should be fun. My niece is going to be in town. I'm happy to have her out for my birthday and with a full agenda of things to do that I think a 15-year-old from Phoenix will enjoy. So there's a lot going on, man. I got to do a podcast. I guess I'm just blowing through this birthday. But we'll celebrate. We'll celebrate together at LA Podfest. What else do I have happening? Oh, I'd really like you to come. If you're in the Bay Area, the Litquake event I'm doing is going to be a blast. I'm going to be in San Francisco doing they're titling it Attempting Normal, Mark Maron in Conversation. It's at the Z Space, but you can just go to litquake.org and get some seats. I believe there's still some seats left. It's a 7 p.m. show. And Jack Boulware, the fella who's going to be in conversation with me, him and I go way back. He's an old friend. He's a writer in his own right. He's been a great friend to me. He's been to both my weddings, and he's had a falling out with me as well. But it was not a big one. It was just one of those ones where it's like, are we cool? Yeah, we're cool. Oh, I didn't know if we were cool. Yeah, we are. So it won't be tense, but it'll be fun, and we'll do a Q&A. And I enjoy doing those type of live events. I like talking to the audience. I like people to ask me things that make me think on my feet. Not unlike what happened at the Trippany House show the other night. I know what's going on. I know some of you come to those shows regularly. I know many of you have seen me over and over again when I workshop this material. And I know also that some of that material is stuff I'm going to be doing because that's part of the work. And I know some of you guys have seen it, but I'll do other stuff, especially if you let me know how many of you have been there. Then I feel guilty. But I'll be at the Trippany House September 23rd and September 30th. I think Nate Bargatze is going to be doing both of those shows with me. And then October 14th, I think the irreplaceable, unique Ryan Singer will be with me. And October 21st, I don't believe I have an opener for that show yet. But those are all happening. You can go to WTFpod.com to the calendar and get links to that. There it's an $8 ticket. There's plenty of parking. It's a very small space, very intimate. And things happen. Things happen that'll never happen again. Not out of choice, but just the way it goes. Sometimes I prefer that for some reason. Monkey was acting weird yesterday. It's like it always happens. He was acting weird. I don't know what's going on. Yeah, I've been very fortunate. Both my cats, the ones that are still with us. Boomer lives, by the way. I don't know where Deaf Black Cat is. I have no fucking idea. I don't know where any of the animals are. I don't know where the skunk smell was coming from. I didn't see them. They didn't seem to reveal themselves. Where are all my animals? I guess it's just too fucking hot. Too hot. Too hot for the animals. But Monkey, I don't know what's going on, and I get nervous. He's acting twitchy. Like, these cats, as they're getting older, are getting very needy. Not in a physical, like, ill way, but just you're getting sort of softer. They're getting a little, I don't know. These were feral cats. But you know, I'm starting to think, man, I always thought that my cats were like twitchy and nervous and amped up because they were feral, because they were when I got them, but they were just barely feral. But for years, they've just been like completely nuts, barely touchable for a long time. And now they're both really sort of warm, but they're just completely skittish. And I got to be honest with you, along with some of the inner work I'm doing, I'm finding that I might be responsible for that. If you were around me all day long with my volatility and my overreacting to things, I think I might have done that to my cats. And now I'm sort of being more aware because I've always thought that I'm not really a cat guy. I'm certainly not a dog guy, but I like cats a lot. I love them. But I'm a little anxious, a little jumpy. And sure enough, they're both fucking jumpy. So now I'm trying to be nice around the cats and just relax because I want them to have a nice retirement. But a monkey just has been going at his dick lately. And I don't know what's going on. Like the other night I fed on some chicken and some nice roasted chicken. And then he went to the litter box and he came back out and he started making weird noises that he doesn't make. He's not a very noisy cat, though he's a little noisier lately. He just started going, and he just started like attacking his own cock. And I thought like, oh, great, there's something fucked up with monkey. Yeah, maybe he's just excited about the chicken. You know, sometimes I eat things and I just want to go at my dick too. I mean, sometimes like you get a bowl of ice cream or a nice piece of cake and, you know, right after it, you're like, you want to make noises. It's just like, oh, yum. Oh, my God. And just pull your dick out and go at it. Can't lick my own dick, but I've felt that urge before. So I'm going to see if it happens again and just, you know, sort of write it off as just overly excited about having some nice chicken is why he gave himself head. But I don't know. We'll see. He seems okay today. He's been spending a lot of time under the bed, but doesn't seem sick. Just a little noisy and sort of going at his own dick occasionally. I've seen more cat dick lately than I like to admit. Because it's not something it's not something you're used to seeing. You know, dog dicks, you know, they're just there. They're just out and dog balls and, you know, dog boners. But every time you see a cat dick, you're like, oh my God, you just have that hidden? That's all. I didn't even assume that was even in there. You know, sometimes, you know, because I've done some talk radio in my day, back in the day, did a little lefty talk, a little political talk, and also because I'm a comic and I do have a certain honesty to me, though it's specific usually to me in my life. Occasionally I get people, you know, who will tweet at me or say things like, how come you're not talking about the Israeli-Palestinian thing? How come you're not talking? Where's your commentary on Ferguson? What's going on? I don't hear you talk. You're a vinyl guy, but I don't hear you talking about what throwing vinyl away does to the environment. Where are you on climate change? Well, right now I'd like to do a segment that I'm improvising. Let's call it Mark Addresses World Problems. Let's try it. Let's try a segment. All right, so I'll make up the guy who's, who's all worked up about my lack of throwing my hat in the ring. So what's going on? How come I don't hear you talking about the Palestinian situation? It's bad, man. It's bad. It's bad, and, it's a sad situation. And, I hope there can be resolution. All right, what about Ferguson? Again, fucked up. Seriously bad. Sometimes the racial realities of the country we live in embarrasses me. And I really hope that gets better and continues to get better. It's bad. Bad situation. What about climate change? I'm against it. I'm totally against climate change. It's again a bad situation. I do what I can. I recycle. I try not to breathe too much. I have a fuel efficient vehicle, but not an electric vehicle. But it's bad. It's bad, and it makes me nervous. I don't think it's going to go haywire completely in my lifetime. But and I don't have kids. But that doesn't mean that I don't care. But it means I care a little less. That's enough, man. I'm exhausted from that political commentary. I'm exhausted. Maybe I should just call that segment, it's bad. That's fucked up. So I always, it's always fun for me to talk to British people because I'm completely ignorant of exactly what goes on over there, what it's like to grow up in Britain. I'm always sort of fascinated by that. I romanticize it. I wouldn't say my perception of it is Dickensian, but I would say it's a mixture of Beatles, some information I've gotten, a little bit of Alan Sillitoe, Loneliness of the Long Distance Runner. Was that his name? you know, it's just a mixed bag. I've spent a couple of weeks in London, but and I think the UK in general, my experience has been it's beautiful and it's old, but I don't know a lot. So it's always thrilling to me just to talk about what it's like to live in the UK with people from the UK. But you know, Nick Frost was very I was thrilled that we had the opportunity to talk to him, and why don't we do that now?
Must have a knife as well on the desk.
Yeah, I want to have that there just in case
it kicks off.
I never know what the hell. Like sometimes people play with shit. I just have stuff there, and you know, it just keeps building.
Yeah,
seems a popular thing. That thing seems to get some attention.
This?
No, the squeezy, muscly thing.
Oh yeah,
I don't even know what those are called. Were they like
a
hand exerciser?
Yeah,
yeah.
A wanking machine.
Yeah, the wanking machine. The power wank machine. So all right. So how long you been in L.A., Nick?
I've been in here, in L.A. since Tuesday night.
Yeah. And how's it going?
Good. Really nice.
Do you like coming here?
I do like coming here. Yeah, I had a terrible night last night. I was up at like 2:30.
Yeah.
And then I just thought, well, can I swear?
Yeah, of course.
I thought, yeah, fuck it. I'm going to stay awake. So then.
Yeah. You've been up all night?
Yeah. I've been watching films. I watch a lot of films. I watched like 4 films already.
But you were hanging out with you said you were hanging out with Edgar at the chateau.
Yes,
and
I managed to get him drunk enough so he'd go at a decent time.
But he's a bit of a lightweight.
Yeah, he's terrible.
And he's a little younger than you too, right?
Yeah, I think he's like 3 or 4 years younger than me. But I've almost had fights for Edgar before where he's got so pissed that he's been out of order to the wrong man and they've wanted to thump him, and then I've had to step in to say, you know, you can't touch this little fella.
But he only does it with you, I bet. He knows you got his back. He's going to start some shit.
Yeah.
But he never got his ass kicked?
I'm sure he has before I arrived. I've wanted to a few times.
So what are you out here doing this trip?
Well, I'm here with the film Box Trolls.
Yeah.
I did like 4 hours work on it, and then they said, well, why don't you come to the premiere and meet Sir Ben Kingsley? So I was like, yeah, all right.
Did you meet Ben Kingsley?
No, Saturday we're doing a Q&A, and I'm having a dilemma as to what to call him.
What are the options? Mr. Kingsley? Ben? Sir?
Well, my heart as a man to a man says, say Ben.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't want to say, hey, Ben, and he says, it's Sir Ben.
Oh, my God.
Because I think I'd have an issue with that.
But you wouldn't feel bad? You'd say, who the fuck you think you are?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'd want to say, I think. I don't recognize your...
Anybody can get knighted now, asshole. Yeah.
I could buy one online. Become the Duke of Brighton.
It's that easy, man.
Yeah, you can actually buy peerages online for Britain.
Really?
Yeah, just like little known ones that have essentially... You know, the lineage has died out and they're just sat there dormant. So you could actually become the Duke of something or Earl. I mean, it means nothing, but...
How much does it cost, something like that?
I think it costs a few grand.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's a famous boxer called Chris Eubank.
Yeah.
Who was like super middleweight champion of the world in like the 80s and 90s. He bought one and like he's now like Duke of Brighton. And he drives around in a giant big rig, like an 18-wheeler truck, but just the cab.
Does it say Duke of Brighton on the side?
Yeah, I think it does.
And that's sort of a sad indicator of what's happened, isn't it? I mean,
yeah, he might as well have the words "Look at me" written on the cab. You
but
know.
The fact that you can buy those things, I guess the money goes to the township, or how does it work there?
Yeah, I think you become like lord of the people, you know, and you can then take your pick of the women and
in the town. So it's still kind of old school like
that.
Oh,
yeah, absolutely. You can prima nupte, isn't it? You get to sleep with the brides on the first night.
For a few $1,000, you get to be a duke, go to the town, pick a lady.
What's not to like?
Yeah, it sounds great. I have a feeling it doesn't work that way, though. Wait, so Ben Kingsley's a guy, you know, I mean, I grew up watching him, you grew up watching him. He's a great actor.
He is.
And why are you going to be hanging out with Ben Kingsley?
Well, it's Leica, who are the guys behind Coraline and Paranorman.
Okay.
And I think they're doing that nice thing that even though they're making animated films, they're doing it stop motion, which is incredible.
Oh, yeah.
So I got a chance to see some of the, you know.
With clay?
Yeah, essentially.
Really?
Yeah. It's really...
Classic.
It's an incredible process.
And takes forever.
It does. I think they started it in 1912.
Yeah. And what do you know? What's your character?
I play a man called Trout, who's essentially a violent meatbag with a heart of gold.
Right.
I'm not sure why they cast me in that role. But he, you know, through his work with Ben Kingsley's character, a.k.a. Mr. I think it's Mr. Peel. He starts to question whether or not he's right, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Now, dude, but is this the first time you're meeting Ben?
Yeah, on Saturday.
And, but you've worked with him for...
Yeah, our voices have worked together in the edit suite.
Isn't that amazing about voiceover?
Simon's in it too, and Elle Fanning is in it.
Yeah.
And Sir Ben, and...
No, but none of you've met.
Tracy Morgan is in it.
But you've met Simon, obviously, but you it was all solitary work. You were just reading.
Yeah, it was just me on my own, sometimes with a lovely Richard Iowadi, and that was it, yeah.
It's amazing that, like, you're part of a film, and you're, you know, it's opening, and you're going to meet the cast now.
Yeah, I did Ice Age too, and so I can probably say I worked with Queen Latifah, and...
Never
met him. Never met Dennis Leary.
That's the beauty and the weirdness of doing animation.
It paid for my kitchen overhaul.
Right.
I'd never met any of the other actors in it.
But what a great ensemble.
What a lovely cast. It's going to be so awkward in the green room.
I'm curious to see, like, stop motion is like, it is something to see because it's almost like a throwback.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, those guys are... you know, the guys that do the Wrong Trousers and the park animation down in Bristol in Britain, they do it. And I was fortunate enough to look around their studios, and it was...
It's like a universe, I imagine.
Yeah,
like,
well, before, like, where they'd each, you know, each frame, they'd move the mouth and it was made of clay. But now they have a thing where they have magnetic clip-on mouths.
Oh, really?
So they have a room with, like, a million mouths in. So they can just snap one up, take that off, put it, and do it that way.
That seems almost more work. It's not?
Apparently not. Apparently it's you just kind of choose your array of mouths for the day, like,
oh my God,
1A to 7C, and then you just
you gotta have such
out.
Like OCD to like do that.
That'd be terrible.
Yeah. Well, I hope it goes well with Ben.
Absolutely.
I hope you pick the right...
I might say, all right, Gandhi.
Perfect.
That might be my opening.
I think you figured it out.
Yeah.
So what part of England did you grow up in?
I grew up in a place called Dagenham, which is the kind of far reaches of the East End.
So I, as a guy who knows nothing about England, paint me a Dickensian picture.
Okay, well, Dagenham is the most famous thing because it has a big Ford plant there.
Okay.
It's a shithole. It's very working class. It was a place to buy hashish and weed, but you could also get cut there fairly easily.
You could get caught easily?
Cut.
Well, really?
Yeah.
Okay, got it.
I think it's one of the cutting capitals of London.
When you look at the tourist map, it's got a guy bleeding.
Yeah. Well, it has like
a hash pipe.
A wound open and one drop of blood coming out. What happened in the East End like the 1950s and 60s is as the immigrant families moved in, the true Cockneys were angry at this, so they all moved out gradually.
Right, do you come from a true Cockney?
Essex. I'm not a true Cockney. A true Cockney, you have to be born within the sound of Bow Bells. Now, Bow Bells is a famous church.
Okay.
And if you can hear Bow Bells as you are being born, then you're a Cockney.
That's really what it depends on?
Yeah.
And where were you? So you didn't make it? You couldn't hear the bells?
No, crikey. Bow Bells was a way away. It was like 5 miles away. So I did not hear Bow Bells coming out of my mum.
But how many kids in your family, though? Is it a big working class family? Or?
It was, but I was the only one from my mum and dad.
Oh.
But my dad had children before me, and my mum had kids before me. So I was the only...
The only thing that really connected them.
Yes, yeah, essentially.
And you had two half-brothers and sisters.
Yeah, in my mum and dad's sex life, I was the only one in that Venn diagram.
Right.
In the middle.
You were the only true one between them. And what, did your dad work at that Ford plant?
No, my dad, he did a lot of things. I remember him, when I first kind of became aware of him, he was a gardener.
Aware of him? Like you were sort of like, hey, there's that guy.
Who are you? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, he was a gardener. And he always had, my dad's not with us anymore, but he, even when he died, he had like the most amazing body for a like 74-year-old man. And he was always fit as a butcher's dog. And yeah, he was a gardener. And then he was an incredible artist as well. So he painted a lot.
Yeah.
And then he started work at a factory which made high-end office furniture.
Okay.
and he started as an upholsterer.
Uh-huh.
And over the next kind of 25 years, he became managing director of the company.
Really?
Yeah.
So he climbed up from upholstery to the guy in charge.
Yeah, he was a delivery driver, and then eventually he was the boss.
So I'm always impressed with people that have skills like gardening, upholstering.
Yeah.
I wish I had it.
I can't do any of that.
You can't do anything?
No.
Yeah.
I think I could probably upholster. Long as it's taut.
Yeah, that's all you need.
Yeah.
Stretch that shit out and staple it.
Yeah.
You got it?
If it's a hydraulic, I'd be all right, I think.
So when you were growing up, I mean, what was the age difference between you and your siblings?
I was the youngest.
Right.
And then...
Did it just go up, or were the two of them the same age? Was it?
Yeah, I think it went like... My youngest sister was 7 years, 4 years older than me. Then there was one...
Oh, so
3 years older than her. Then there was, you know, it went up like that.
So you've got a half sister, a half brother or sister that's probably 60.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you know them all?
I don't. It's a well, I do, but it's part of my sad life story actually that a lot of them kind of didn't make it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
They've passed away.
Yeah.
Oh, that's sad.
Four of them.
Really?
Yeah.
Four out of the
six.
Wow. Tragically, or
you know, life.
Yeah,
and how it moves and rolls. Sadly, so yeah. I mean, it was a real pain in the hole.
Yeah,
it's a wonder that I can keep going. Yeah. If I'm being honest.
Well, I guess that. You seem pretty healthy.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I also lost a mum and a dad in that time too. So. Yeah, so much frigging tragedy that but I think my...
Oh, but not at once, not in some...
No.
Okay.
Maybe that would have been easier to just get it all over and done with, as opposed to be drip-fed grief.
Yeah.
I think my point and my outlook on life is, what's the alternative? You know, you
right.
just get up and keep going.
You got to keep going. Yeah, you can't get, because the sadness will drag you down.
Oh my God, you'd stick a nine in your mouth.
Yeah, it's crazy. But we're built to deal with it, from what I understand.
Yeah.
Humans.
Yeah. I think you just get better at it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Your heart gets cold.
Yeah. Cold heart. By the time my dad went, I was like, ta-da.
Yeah. See you later.
I lifted his hand up and we had a
high five.
A post-mortem high five.
You put it back in the box.
Yeah. Bye, Dad. But I have a kid now, you know, I have a 3-year-old son. So all that is now gone because I now have my own deal.
So that's a pretty new thing.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to dying on him.
Yeah.
So
you should plan it.
So
decide what age you'd like to go at. What would be best for him to handle.
Yeah. I think seven.
Yeah. No. Well, that's
seven's good for a child to lose his dad.
Yeah, that might be a little young, but you know what? He won't remember you that clearly. Yeah.
Really upsets me, that notion of.
Of what? Not of dying.
Because I don't remember much before five.
Right.
Right?
Sure.
So all that amazing relationship I have with my son now and the closeness we have, he wouldn't care if I went. He wouldn't even remember me.
There'd just be a picture on a mantle somewhere and there'd be a new guy there.
Who's that fat bearded? Yeah. He'd call that guy dad.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, this is getting depressing. Don't do it. Stay around.
Let's listen to a record.
Yeah, what do you got? I got a few records inside. But when you were growing up, your goal was not to be an actor.
No, I had no goal.
Good for you. That's a good way a creative person starts.
Even now, I think.
Yeah,
you know, I've been doing meetings with people this week, and they're a weird thing, but I could see...
The generals? The general meeting?
Yeah. But I could see people going to pitch stuff in the waiting room.
Right.
And they were just panicking and shitty, and they were saying... have you got enough charge in your iPad for the presentation? Yeah. It's like, I've never given a shit about anything that much, you know?
Yeah.
And I seem to have a real good laugh at these things, and we just go in and we just have a chat and...
Yeah, it's sort of like, we love you. That was so funny, that thing you did with that guy.
Yeah.
What are you doing? That's a good question.
I have that weird... Yeah. What do you want to do?
Yeah. What do you...
I have that weird thing, and I think you don't... You kind of get them in Britain too, but you get them a lot here, and I did that... I did a pilot this year with Justin Long for CBS called Sober Companion. And I loved it. I loved that man and I love working with him. But there was that weird thing that you come off set and there's like another set of monitors and behind them are execs from...
Yeah, for just a little stack of untalented people.
Yeah, I don't know what the collective noun would be for them.
But, right.
they do that thing rather than laugh.
Yeah.
They just tell you you're funny.
Right.
But with the most, oh my God, you're really funny.
Right, right.
It's like, oh, you mean that? Because yeah. what I'm hearing is, oh, yeah. you're a massive cunt.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's what it sounds like.
Everything's not a non-committal. They don't want to get your hopes up in yeah. any way. They don't want you to get the wrong idea.
They don't want to get fired.
Exactly. And the pilot didn't go or did? You don't
it
know.
It did not go.
See? So that's what they were saying.
Yeah.
That's exactly what they
oh
were saying.
Oh my God, you'll never be employed yeah. here.
That's exactly it. But when you were younger, what were you doing in this shithole that you lived in?
I was nothing. I mean, I got into trouble. I smoked. I had fights. I played a lot of rugby.
Rugby. See, that's something we don't have here.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you do have a team. You guys are playing New Zealand soon.
Oh, I knew that.
And I
no,
think,
I did not.
To be honest, it's going to be a three-figure mauling.
Yeah, by New Zealand.
Yeah. They're playing in Soldier Field. It's a sellout.
Well, we're not. It's not an indigenous sport here.
No,
it's probably new to us. I know it happens in some colleges, but
yes.
I don't know. It's like football, correct?
Yeah, but
like
that,
not soccer football, but American football.
Yeah, but no pads, and it's almost continuous. You know, we don't work on the down system.
So it's like it just keeps moving.
It keeps moving.
People are getting the shit beat out of each other.
Yeah,
and you can see it.
Oh yeah, I mean,
there's no pads protecting anybody.
No, they wear. There's
I don't
a thing,
know why that never caught on here.
Yeah, it's true. There's a thing you can get called you get cabbage patch ears.
Yeah,
and so you see MMA fighters with big fat ears, and rugby players get it too.
Oh, really?
So now they're kind of wearing
a hat
kind
of
foamy
sort.
Helmets.
Yeah,
can we say foamy helmet?
Sure.
I don't know. But yeah, I played that for a long time as a kid.
Was that like? Did you see it as a career possibility?
I kind of. Well, it wasn't paid at that time when I was
right.
when I was playing. You didn't get paid,
yeah.
but now they get paid. You know,
right,
it's
right.
professional. But I was kind of good. You know, I was. I played for.
Were you in the paper?
I was not in the paper. I don't think.
No,
I think the scores were and
right,
the
but,
teams,
but not but, like this guy's special.
Yeah,
none of
watch
that.
Watch this lump.
Yeah.
I you know I essentially played for my state.
Mm-hmm.
I got to that kind of level.
Oh, so there's a state team.
What? Well, you have a county team, so
yeah.
county for us is the same as state for you guys.
Okay.
So it was all right.
Yeah.
I was probably five steps from being kind of pretty good.
But was there ever talk of going pro, or did you,
no,
or they
I
didn't
got,
have it yet?
I got to a point, I got injured when I was 16, and I was out for like 9 months. And then when I came back, I'd kind of fallen for weed and drinking and girls. And
yeah,
the
it was over.
I was thought,
washed
nah,
up.
That. I went back when I was 22.
To rugby?
22, 23, yeah. A mate of mine, a Nigerian mate of mine, said, why don't you come and train with London, Nigeria?
Yeah.
And I was the only white man on the team.
And this is before show business.
This was before show, a long time before show business. And they would fight so much during training amongst themselves.
Yeah.
That I got to, I thought, fuck this. On a Tuesday, raining Tuesday night.
Yeah.
I thought, no, and that was it. That was my.
You didn't want to fight with them?
No, not really. I mean, because they're big, you know,
yeah.
6'8" and
yeah.
300 pounds.
Yeah.
Fuck that. This is training.
Yeah.
I don't mind fighting on match day, but
why now?
Why am I losing teeth on a Tuesday night?
That's a good question. And a reasonable question
a
to ask.
A memoir.
For a great, exactly. Why am I losing teeth on a Tuesday night? That's the memoir of Nick Frost. But are you a fighty guy?
I have my moments. I think people assume because I'm a comedian and they see me playing Danny Butterman or Little Ed that I am that man. But coming from where I came from, you kind of had to be.
Really?
Yeah, it was a tough play. So I'm not.
Yeah.
But if pushed, then I will.
Are you a winner?
I'm nasty, so...
Oh, really?
Yeah. I think it's that thing. There's no Queensbury rules. It's finish it quickly, you know.
Just pummel the guy.
Yeah. I've been done a few times, too.
Really?
But yeah. Simon had to come and take me from the hospital one time because I got kind of done by five men on the street.
What, and did you start it?
Nah, man. They just got jumped for no reason. And
oh, that's a mugging.
Yeah,
well,
they didn't take anything though.
They just felt like beating the shit out of you.
Yeah,
you didn't say anything.
I couldn't. They were like 18, and I was like, they just five of them surrounded me, and I think you know you're in trouble when their opening gambit is, I'm gonna fuck you up, you fat cunt,
and for no reason other
no
than
no reason at
that.
All. No.
So, but like generally growing up in a type of neighborhood, because I don't have any experience with it, what would fights be about? Bullshit.
Yeah, just fronting up, you know?
Yeah.
Just you didn't like someone for whatever reason. And
just at a pub and it's just sort of, fuck you.
Yeah, I mean, I hated it, you know, and growing up where I did, it was a large Irish community too, so...
Was that a problem?
It wasn't a problem, but, you know, I went to pubs at quite an early age, you know. I was pubbing it at like 13, 14, and yeah. We'd all try and get in somewhere and get in somewhere else, and invariably the drink at that point, not for me, but for... pubs and clubs that were full of drunken Irishmen on payday, it yeah. would kick off, and it was kind of horrific to me, you know, and it frightened the life out of me. And I think, right. you know, the best thing that happened to British culture was you know, ecstasy, because yeah. it essentially stopped all violence in all pubs and clubs
because everybody loved each other.
Yeah, yeah, punches were replaced by hugs.
Hugs, oh, amazing, that's sweet. But like the like, it's weird because it's hard not to stereotype. But I went to college in Boston, and I was fairly terrified of Irish people.
Yeah,
they just, because a lot of the town was Irish, and you'd go to these bars, and it would just be like, I'm going to get my ass kicked yeah. for no reason.
Not bothered either. It's that, I love that thing that truly violent people have no thought about consequence. Right. And I always had, you know, and being a big man who was agile, you think, I could just kill you right now with one. Right. You know, it's that thing you read about, guy hits a guy and that guy's knocked out and he falls over and hits his head.
And it's over.
And he dies. Yeah. And it's like, I've always been terrified of that.
Yeah.
And that's why I don't...
Of causing that?
Potentially. Right.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah. Accidentally killing the guy.
It'd be terrible. Yeah. It'd be absolutely awful. And it happens all the time. So,
Over
nothing.
Yeah.
But, you know, people... Like the guys in Boston and the hard nuts at home, they don't give a shit about that. You know, they don't even think about it.
I guess that's, yeah, it's, I guess that's what makes somebody a good fighter.
Yeah. It sounds like an oxymoron.
Right, right.
But yeah.
That guy doesn't give a fuck about anything. Yeah. He's the best.
Who was I talking to the other day? We saw a guy in a pub and he was a lot of scars on his face. And she said, God, I'm really frightened of this guy. And I said, it's not the guy with the scars you need to be frightened about. It's the guy who gave him the scars, who invariably has no scars, you know.
Yeah. So when you got all involved with the weed and the booze and you gave up your 16-year-old rugby dream,
yeah,
what'd you end up doing?
Nothing, really. I just I dropped out of high school when I was like 16, 15 and a half, 16. And I started work... when I was like almost 16,
yeah,
at a shipping company,
yeah,
for like $7,000 a year,
yeah,
and I kind of liked it because they treated me like an adult, you know, and I hated right. school because they didn't treat me like an adult,
right?
And I didn't act like an adult, to be fair, but they, I loved it. I love working.
So you're just a guy,
yeah,
like loading shit,
yeah,
doing stuff,
yeah,
making a paycheck,
just making it work,
yeah,
yeah. That's what
working
I did.
With other guys,
yeah. Chatting to the girls in the office. Hello, darling.
Yeah,
yeah.
That guy.
I was that idiot.
And but you had no, you'd never tried comedy, you'd never done comedy.
No.
And then by the time you went back and decided not to join the Nigerian rugby team.
Yeah.
What was going on in your life when you decided to do comedy? How did that come about? Where were you?
Well, I lived away. I was told in knowing certain terms that I should leave London.
By who?
There are areas that I'm not willing, not prepared to talk about. But essentially, I was said, perhaps you should leave London for a little bit. So I did. I left and I went to Israel. And I lived in Israel for 2 years.
What?
I was only meant to be there for like 4 or 5 months, and then I ended up staying right, there for 2 years.
All right, back up. So you get thrown out of England.
Not thrown out, but...
But politely asked to leave.
Yeah.
By people that had some weight.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you go to Israel. Why Israel?
A mate of mine had been, and he said, this would be good for you. You should go.
To Israel?
Yeah.
Really?
Like weeks after the first Gulf War had ended.
What was your mate doing in Israel?
He was on kibbutz.
So he's a Jewish guy?
No, he was Christian.
He's a Christian guy.
Catholic, yeah.
So it's sort of, I need to get my shit together.
Yeah.
I'm going to go, I'm going to farm.
I'm going to drop out.
Hang out with people.
Yeah, I'm going to learn Hebrew. I'm going to pick kiwi fruits.
And that's what he did?
Yeah.
And how old was he?
He was a bit older than me. He was like in his mid-20s when I was 18.
I didn't know that the kibbutz system was a viable alternative for anybody to get their shit together, but it makes sense.
Yeah.
Because for American Jews, it's sort of like, go get connected to Israel.
Yeah.
But for apparently people in the UK, it's like, better than jail.
Let's go. Yeah. But also, it's that thing that it's... You're called a volunteer,
mm-hmm.
and it's Swedish girls, it's South African girls, it's New Zealand girls, it's Australian girls.
So that also appealing.
Yeah.
And not just, the work necessarily. But
I like the work. I've always liked heavy lifting. And
so what part of Israel were you in?
I was right on the Lebanese border.
Oh, yeah.
Which was kind of exciting in a way.
What was the name of the town?
Bar-Am. Bar-Am, right in the north.
And so you go there, you leave England, you pack up your shit,
yeah.
you say goodbye to your folks,
yeah.
and go into Israel.
Ta-da.
Yeah.
I'll see you in 3 months.
Yeah. And you stayed on the kibbutz for 2 years?
I did, yeah. I was there for like 14 months, and then I came back, hated it, and then I was at home for like 2 weeks, and then went away again for another 9 months.
So were you out of your mind?
Yeah, I just kind of became a, like... like a kibbutznik, you know. I just it was such a weird thing to come back to London after all that time. And
so what is life on the kibbutz like?
It's very formulaic. It gave me an insight into the fact that I'd probably do all right in prison.
Right.
You know, it was like you'd
but get you, did you, was there like did you make like sort of a conscious choice between that or say the military or something?
No, I mean, I had looked in, you know, I'd gone to like open days for the Navy and you know it wasn't for me,
right?
But I loved it. Yeah. I loved it. I like,
so
you know,
what do you do?
You'd get up at 4:30 in the morning,
yeah,
and you'd go to work, you know, lots of different jobs. You could pick apples, or the longer you were there, the better the job you got, essentially,
right.
And then when I'd been there almost 2 years on and off, I was like Colonel Kurtz.
Yeah.
I had like, I ended up driving my own little van and I just hung out with the Israelis. And
you saw several different groups of people come and go.
Come in and go in.
Because a lot of people would do a month or do a...
Yeah, yeah. And then the Israelis trust you more the more you're there. You know, because they see so many different volunteers coming and out and they treat the place like shit and get drunk and vomit everywhere.
It's like camp to them.
Yeah, same thing. So if you stick through it, if you stick through winters, they seem to like you. Or bombardment by the
Lebanese
Mujahideen. Yeah.
So did what was your take on Israeli people? What did you learn from them? They're kind of a tough lot.
They are a tough lot. And I think a lot of people think they're very rude.
Uh-huh.
Now, my problem with that is it's the way they turn Hebrew into English.
Mm-hmm.
So in Hebrew, it's perfectly acceptable to say, give me this.
Yeah.
That's well, how
right.
Tenley,
right.
whatever.
Yeah.
Give me.
Don't dial it up.
No.
You? Yeah.
I might be killed in an hour.
Yeah. I'd like that now.
In the West Bank. So please can I have the apple? So when they speak English, they say, give me this, give me that. And
yeah.
people think, Jesus Christ, what a rude race. But yeah. it's just the way the...
Right. It's just the way the culture operates.
Yeah.
And so you picked apples and what else did you do?
I picked apples. If you'd been there a while, you could work in fish ponds.
No, really?
Amazing. Like giant fish ponds. And then once every kind of 3 months...
You pull the fish out?
You pull the fish out.
What kind of fish?
St. Peter's carp.
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
That's the fish there, St. Peter's fish.
Yeah, they love it.
Yeah, it's great.
Because it's got a little black dot on its side, and
yeah.
that's supposedly where St. Peter pulled the fish out of
Jesus'
eye.
Did you find... So you were working the fish pond, you picked apples, you
picking
knew
cotton.
Cotton?
Cotton.
Really?
Yeah.
By hand?
Yeah. And they also had like
that beats your hands up, doesn't it?
They don't care, the Israelis.
No, I know, but wait, with the experience
well,
of picking
gloves,
cotton.
Obviously, oh, yeah. you know, I'm not made of stone, Mark.
My mistake.
They had like a plastic factory as well, which was mindless.
That must be. That's a huge kibbutz.
Yeah, it was big.
A plastic factory?
Yeah.
You know how plastic is made?
Well, they would make. Do you know when you have a little catheter in your arm,
yeah.
like a valve?
Right.
They would make the valves.
Oh, that's what. So they manufactured.
That's
shit.
All they made. Yeah,
that's fascinating to me.
Yeah.
Did you tour Israel?
Yeah. I mean, if you're there, and I think every 4 or 5 months, the Israelis say, "Let's go and do a trip." So you go to Jerusalem, or you'd go to Masada and
yeah.
the Dead Sea.
Did
and
you go to the top of Masada?
I did. Yeah.
It's great, right?
Fascinating. Yeah.
It's a good hike.
It is a good hike, yeah.
And the story of it's amazing.
Yeah, I was thinking about that the other day, actually.
Really?
Was it like 1,000 people?
Yeah.
And 100 of those drew lots.
Right.
And that 100 killed the other 900.
Horrible.
And then from that 100, 10 were chosen to kill the other 90.
Is that how it worked?
Yeah, that's how they did it.
That's brutal. And it was just to not give the, what was it, the Romans?
The Romans, yeah.
The victory.
Yeah. Oh. And so the ones that were left, I think there were like 4 or 5 people left, like women and children hid in wells and stuff. And they let them go because they were so impressed with the fact that they'd killed all of themselves.
I wonder what happened to the legacy of those people, if that's part of their genealogical history. We were of the 5 survivors of Masada.
They live in wells. Their ancestors still now live in wells. Well, I think it's amazing that the Romans spent, what was it, like 5 years building a giant ramp out of earth to get up there?
Yeah, shit took time. And you can still see part of the ramp, right? Why did they want the property so badly? Because it was a good lookout? I don't know.
I think it had aircon. I think it had primitive aircon.
So what did you think of Jerusalem? That place is a mind fuck. It's amazing.
Yeah, weird. It was a weird place. I mean,
The headquarters are there. All the big religious
all
franchises.
All the big ones are there, yeah.
Are you a religious person?
No, not at all.
How were you brought up?
Catholic.
Oh, so that killed it for you, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I had to go to church every day because of the school I was in. And I kind of...
Was there a point where you did believe?
Not really. I mean, maybe as a kid, I smelled a rat from an early age, you know.
Catholics smell the rat quicker than other people usually.
Smell the rat could also be my memoir's name.
Yeah, I guess there's something about the charade of Catholicism that at some point you got to realize, like, they're putting a lot of effort into this.
Yeah. Why haven't I got a massive ring?
Yeah, right. How come that guy's winning?
Why has he got a big ring?
His nice clothes were all covered with like that Monty Python bit. He's the only one that hasn't got shit on him.
Yeah.
The king. How do you know he's a king? Yeah. So, all right. So you spent 2 years in. That's fascinating to me. And you came home and you're like, fuck this. And you went back to Israel.
Yeah.
And then what happened?
I fell in love. I met a girl and followed her back to London.
So she was from England.
Yeah.
And so that's why you left Israel. There's a good chance if it wasn't for that chick, you would still be in Israel.
Yeah.
In the army by now.
I think I'd be an officer in the army.
Yeah, yeah.
But maybe I'd lost an arm in an exchange with Syria.
With an Irishman.
In a brutal exchange with an Irishman. I mean, I got to a point where I was kind of given choices in terms of, well, you've been here a while now, so, you know, maybe you should get married and stay or...
Oh, to become a citizen.
Just to become part of the kibbutz, maybe.
Oh, really? So there was if you log the hours, there's a cult element to it.
Yeah.
We'd like to keep you
now
and your
you
children
can stay,
here.
Yeah.
You have good stock. Perhaps you should go to the breeding tent.
You have to give the children... That fascinated me, too, that they give their children to the community, literally
I didn't know that.
At birth. Yeah. Not all kibbutzes do it, but our one did, and your children are looked after communally and stay in a house separately from you.
Well, the idea was it was rooted in the idea of socialism, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I guess, you know, you're there as part of that, a member of that kibbutz to work. And I think their thing was Western society, the parents or the father is so kind of often at work and they get 20 minutes or an hour when they get in.
Right.
And so, you know, the kids are looked after all day communally.
Yeah.
And then you get 4 or 5 hours in the afternoon solid, you know.
With your folks.
Solid, yeah. And then you just sleep in a different house.
Were there people I had that were brought up that way on the kibbutz?
Oh, yeah. All of them. All the kids. Yeah. I mean, there were young adults there, you know.
Were they well adjusted and everything? Seemed like a good,
yeah,
good thing.
Yeah, as well as any Israeli can be, I guess, living, you know.
Did you keep any contacts with any friends from that time?
I didn't. I don't. I'm not like that.
Yeah.
I don't know anyone from you know, 2 years ago, really.
That's where it drops off.
I don't know if it's the brain thing.
Yeah.
But I'm not a looker-backer, you know. I rarely do.
Did you learn Hebrew?
Tiny bits. You know, I was good. By the time I left, I could understand more than I could speak, but it just goes. It went.
Yeah. So you followed a woman from England that you met there?
Yeah, she was, her grandmother was Israeli and she could speak Hebrew. And
Jewish girl?
Jewish girl. It was doomed from the start.
Yeah.
Her mum hated me.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. And it just didn't work. Although, I liked her very much.
But it got you back in town.
It did, yeah.
And you were like, what, 22, 23?
I was 21.
And how old were you when you met Simon?
22.
So it's about to happen.
Yeah. I could feel it.
So you come back to England, and what are you working? Where are you working?
Well, this girl, she worked at a Mexican restaurant called Chiquito's, and by the time I got back to London, my parents had moved.
Did they tell you where they went?
They didn't tell me. I knocked at the door, and a lovely Punjabi lady answered, and I said, "You're not my mum." Yeah. But yeah, I mean, my mum was a Welsh woman, so they moved back down to Wales.
I have no idea what that, like, I've met one other, who'd I meet? John Ronson.
Yeah.
The, a writer, he's Welsh.
John Ronson's son is the funniest little kid I've ever met. He's,
really?
Yeah, I could have spent, I have a theory about certain children that I call them old young men.
Yeah.
Where they're actually really old, but they're kind of young, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's one of those.
Oh, really?
I saw him at the pool premiere.
Uh-huh.
We were just chatting, having a laugh, and he's like 8. Yeah. He had like a little green corduroy suit on.
Oh, really?
Yeah, amazing.
Ronson's a good guy.
He's a good man.
Smart guy.
Yeah.
But so your mother's from Wales. What's Wales like?
Wales is it's kind of industrial. You know, it's known for its steel production and coal, which kind of dropped off in the 80s, you know.
Yeah.
And as soon as that industry left, a lot of it died. You know, you got beautiful villages that just... Nothing. Every man was now out of work, you know.
Oh, so it got the beautiful villages masking the horrendous depression.
And rampant alcoholism.
Yeah.
And wife beating of that. Yeah. But the flip side, where my family are from, is a place called Pembrokeshire, which is the furthest west you can go in Britain, essentially. And it's absolutely beautiful. There's just so much rugged cliffs and beaches and crystal clear water and a lot of sheep.
And that's where your parents moved to?
Yeah, yeah.
So you had that to go back to if you wanted.
I did, but I hated going back because it was essentially, you know, it felt like I was living inside a tumor. You know, you could feel that kind of loss in terms of...
The jobs and everything.
Yeah,
it's so interesting to me when I hear about Britain not knowing a lot about it that... Yeah, it's been around for so many centuries, and there's so much beautiful history. But most of the modern stories are like, "Ugh, this is horrible." The industry left, and
just we're nothing to eat our dogs.
Yeah, just nothing but sadness.
Yeah. I mean, not everywhere. I mean, London booms, and but you know, little cities, little towns, just. And also, it's that thing that I'd go to this town since I was a little boy, and so the people you'd see who were 18 or 19 when I was 5 or 6. Now I'm 24, 25. Sitting in the pub, and they're in their 40s, still in that same pub. You think, gee whiz, you can feel the town just dying as its youngsters either leave or.
Well, there's a little bit of that vibe in the World's End. You know, there's that, because that happens to everybody to some degree.
Yeah,
you know, some people leave and some people never leave.
Yeah,
oh, it's heartbreaking, but I don't know. Like, I'm not going to get too existential about it, but when you really think about the span of a lifetime,
oh, Christ,
and people, what they do or what they don't do, it's very easy to just sit there and like, well, tomorrow I'll do it, and then
and then it goes.
Yeah, it all goes.
But you can do, you know, when I was a waiter, I thought I'll do this for 3 months. And then 5.5 years down the line, I'm still there. And you think, Jesus Christ, it goes so quick.
Was this where? At the Mexican restaurant?
Yeah.
So you were there for that long?
Yeah.
So you go, so you're in love with this Jewish British girl.
Yeah.
And she's working
in Los Angeles now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Did you see her?
No. We haven't seen each other for a long, long time.
But you know she's here.
Yeah.
Is she an actress?
She was at some point, yeah. She had a nice part in James Cameron's Titanic.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's astounding, isn't it? Kind of interesting. But you just didn't keep in touch. I guess, what are you going to do? It ended badly.
Yeah. She gave me a piece of information when she broke up with me, which I've kept with me forever, really.
Yeah.
And she said, when you realize you're not going to spend the rest of your life with someone, at what point do you call it a day? And it really hurt me at the time. But now, like 20 years later, I think that's bloody good information. You know,
sure. But was that before she called it a day?
That was at the moment of her calling it a day. We were outside Woodford Bridge train station, and that was her...
That was her breakup?
That was a rhetorical question to me.
Right, that was a rhetorical question as a breakup.
Oh, you mean us? Oh, right. Oh, I don't know. Now? Should we do it now?
But during the time you were working at the restaurant with her, you guys were dating for like 5 years?
No, she was a traveller at heart. She was a fly-by-night kind of good time girl, and she had a massive, she had many, many friends, and
yeah.
You know, she'd stay and she'd work for 4 months and get enough money, and then she'd go to New York, or then she'd go to
and then come
Australia
back?
And yeah, she'd flit around, you but know.
And you stayed solid at the restaurant?
I did.
So she would go away for 4 months after you broke up, and yeah. She'd come back, hey, how's it going?
But she only came back a couple of times before right. Then leaving for good. I
right.
Think she moved to a different restaurant.
That's kind of a brutal kind of thing. Like,
hello, how you been?
Yeah.
I like this character that you have of yourself, the sort of hurt guy.
Yeah, I know. That's who's in me.
Hello.
You look good. You look nice. You look nice is good.
Yeah, yeah. How's it been?
You seen anyone?
Yeah. Oh, my God. So you're a waiter at a fucking Mexican restaurant.
Yeah.
How was the food?
Well, the food was good when I started.
Yeah.
But it's the shittest food in the world right now. It was taken over by a chain.
It's still there?
Yes, yeah, there's a few of them. But when I worked there, every day,
yeah.
They would make everything fresh.
Right.
And it was absolutely delicious.
And this is a great story because, you know, like something you could not have expected.
Yeah.
Comes into your world and changes your entire life.
Yeah. Simon.
Simon.
Yeah.
But like it's a rare thing that happens. Because
yeah.
you had no, because it sounds to me that, you know, you were heartbroken, lost, you know.
I've had that a lot.
Yeah.
A lot of heartbreak and loss, you know.
Well, right.
I like it. I know it seems weird, but I like that.
What about it do you like?
I like that angsty pain of unrequited love, you know. It's,
sure, sure.
I kind of got quite good at it. So in terms of it being a default setting, I was all right with that. I knew how that felt.
Right, and if you got a handle on that, you can handle anything, really.
Yeah, but in terms of other women, that shit gets old. That left bank hurt poet.
Right, right.
It's fine for a bit, but it becomes fairly unattractive in your mid-30s.
But are you saying to me that you resigned yourself to it?
Yeah, I think I always fell in love with women who were fairly unattainable in terms of they were really beautiful.
And you know what that guarantees? That you stay in that shitty place.
Yeah.
That must be how you feel comfortable.
Serving pints of margarita to thick-fisted Irishmen.
So you're heartbroken.
Yeah.
You have no goals.
No.
You're just working at a restaurant.
Yeah.
Going home every night to your sad little house.
Well, we'd all go out. There was a curry house called the Pink Rupee.
Yeah.
In a place called Cricklewood. And yeah. Every night, literally, we'd finish our shift and we'd go there and we'd have a late supper, all the waiters.
Oh, yeah.
And drink.
So you had friends.
8-9 pints of Stella.
Yeah.
And then go back and sit up till 4 or 5 in the morning just puffing on, you know?
Yeah. And that was your life.
Good life.
And what happens?
A girl came to work at the restaurant called Charlotte, and me and her became really good friends really quickly. She was just, there was never any attraction there. But you know when you just get someone?
Yeah.
You think, wow, how did this begin?
Yeah.
And she had a boyfriend called Simon.
Yeah.
And one night I had a party at my place and she was bringing him along and I'd never met him before. And I was nervous. I was nervous to meet this guy because he was a stand-up and I was like the funniest bloke at Chiquito's. That was official, by the way. Yeah. And yeah, I met him and we had like a weird, we kind of circled around each other for like 2 hours at the party. Like I didn't want to.
Yeah, yeah. Like, who's and then the I funny
got,
guy?
Yeah, yeah. And then I got to a point where he was outside on this balcony and I kind of went out there and I remember we stood there for like 2 hours doing impressions at one another, like the dueling banjo scene from
from Deliverance,
but with impressions.
What impressions were you doing?
Like characters from The Young Ones and Newsreaders, and there was a weather guy called Ian McCaskill, and he was really famous for like he'd start every weather thing. He'd say this, "Hello," and that so like me and him. But even now, like. That can make me and Edgar and Simon laugh a lot if just out of the blue one of us says, hell there. Oh, no way, hell. So, yeah, we did that a lot. And then, as was my wont at that point, I then became so paralytically drunk that as Simon left the party, I had like a big bass bin in my flat, like a big speaker.
Yeah.
And his last memory of that party was me unconscious slumped on top of it as music went blah, 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 blah,
yeah, yeah.
And it kind of vibrated me off of it.
Yeah.
That was that, you know. And then we suddenly realized that kind of 3 or 4 months down the line, we'd spent every day together.
And you just became friends? Yeah. The three of you usually?
The three of us, yeah. The three of us became thick as thieves. And we would just, like, howl with uncontrollable laughter. And I'd never met anyone like Simon. And
did you go see him perform?
Yeah. There was a year when I went with him to 250 gigs. Well, I'd drive him, and a couple of times I'd intro him, and you know, Charlotte at the point that he started to say, maybe you should try some stand up. And at first he wrote like a list of clubs.
Right. For
that,
you.
That would take me on and I could do an open spot. And I'd never ever dreamed of doing anything like that or being an actor I was fucking terrified of doing that, you know.
But you did it?
I did. I did 12 gigs and 6 were amazing.
Oh yeah, what did you do? Impressions or
no? I just wrote like a little 8-minute routine. Uh-huh. I didn't really have a voice. It wasn't my own voice. It was kind of surreal, and you know, we really loved the comedians Vic Reeves and Bob Mortimer, and their thing was surrealism at that time, and so I wanted to be kind of like that. And,
yeah,
and I think the problem with it is I wasn't very good because I hadn't done it a lot. You know,
right.
It's like everything. You just have to get up there and just do it and do it and do it. You
yeah,
know?
Yeah.
And so 6 were good, and 6 were the lowest points of my life. And that includes burying both parents. They were completely awful. I did a gig which lasted 3 seconds.
What happened in 3 seconds?
I was working in the restaurant. I'd done a
Chiquitos.
Chiquitos. A waitress was taking over from me at 6 o'clock. I had a gig at like 8:30. But the other part, you know, the other side of the city. And you have Pro Plus here?
What is that?
Pro Plus are like caffeine tablets. I've been eating those during the day and drinking coffee. And by the time she got there, I was so fucking furious. You know, my teeth were grating. And then it took me 2.5 hours to get across the city in the rain on buses.
Uh-huh.
And when I got into the venue, there was probably 14 people in there.
Oh, yeah.
And they were all aged between 18 and 24-year-old men.
Yeah.
And they were all from the same soccer team. And when I walked in, there was a heckle war going on between them mm-hmm. and the compere.
Mm-hmm. And the host?
And the host. Yeah. And the compere saw me with my coat on and I kind of waved. And still with my coat on.
Did he have that face? Hello.
He introduced me to get himself out of the shit. It's only like my third gig.
Thank God you're here.
Yeah. And I kind of got on. I still had my coat on. And I kind of went, oh, hello. Kind of a bit humble. Hello. And like this big lump stood up and said, fuck off, you fat cunt. And I just clipped the mic back on and went home. I just walked off and went home. And that was it.
Heartbroken again.
Yeah. Still out in the rain for another 2-hour journey back.
Was that the last gig?
I did a couple more after that. There was almost a fist fight with a heckler. But yeah, the return in terms of... I'd get sick afterwards. I'd get the worst migraines.
Really?
Because I'd been thinking about it for 3 days up to the point where I'd do
it. The worst.
And then that release of actually, you know, if people would laugh and it would go well, I'd feel so sick afterwards.
Yeah, because you put yourself... And if they don't laugh, then it's all still inside you.
Yeah.
Then it moves from spending 3 days thinking about it to spending 3 days being the shit out of yourself.
Yeah.
Being the shit out of yourself about it. Thinking about how did it fucking go wrong?
Yeah, I was just bad at it, you know.
So it didn't, you know, you didn't stick. It didn't stick.
No, no.
So how did it lead to the creation of what was it? Space, right?
Yeah. Well, it was Simon. You know, he was a great stand-up, and you know, he got more. He did Edinburgh Festival a few times,
right.
And he started to get the attention of TV commissioners and script editors. You know. And they offered him a show called Spaced with him and a lovely lady called Jessica Hines.
Yeah, I saw that. I watched all of them. They're great.
Oh, cool. Thank you.
Yeah.
And so they got offered this sitcom. They offered them a series straight away. We didn't have to make a pilot.
But whose idea was it? Was it Edgar's or who?
No, it was Simon and Jessica's.
Oh, so they pitched it?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then, you know, they got Edgar on board, and then Edgar was essentially the third Beatle, you know, in that team.
Yeah.
And Simon came to me at one point and said, I used to do a character called Mike Watt, who was a member of the National Guard, and he said, I want you to come and do that character on the show. And, you know, being a... never wanting anything or never, you know, never having an idea of what I ever wanted to do, I had that, and it annoys Simon, but I have that thing where he says, why don't you come and do this? And I kind of went, yeah, all right.
Yeah,
like,
right.
Well, if I've got nothing better to do, yeah, I will. And I, to be honest, I never thought it would ever happen.
Well, it's actually the best way to be because you don't have expectations. You don't get into a place where you're desperate.
Yeah.
And you don't, it's just sort of like, it's neither here nor there, really.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if it wasn't that, it would be something else.
Right.
You know, I've always had a weird kind of Jiminy Cricket in me that says, it'll be all right.
Yeah.
No matter what's happened to me in my life.
Right.
That's that voice that said, it'll be all right.
That's the best you can have.
Yeah.
It's like, I'll be okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll be all right.
And so,
you'll be dead soon. Keep going.
But that character was sort of a complicated, interesting character.
Yeah.
Because, like,
yeah.
I mean, I imagine as the... however you conceived of it or whatever you were doing. You were doing it on stage occasionally or just for fun?
No, just, to make him laugh.
Right.
And him sitting in a pub.
Because it became like the relationship between you two became interesting and that character had a sort of softness to its weirdness.
Yeah.
And it became sort of an endearing thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could see me and Simon's relationship in that. You
right.
know? And I think we've, out of every character me and him have ever played, we've both been each other's characters at different points of our lives, you know?
Right, right.
Which is kind of fun.
And did you, like, what was the reaction to Spaced? How it was successful
people
right away?
People loved it.
Yeah.
People loved it.
And it's amazing to me in Britain that, like, you did, what did you do? Like,
7 episodes. Well, 14, but 7 in a season.
Right, and that's it. You did
that
2
was it.
Seasons.
Yeah.
Is it just sort of like, that's what you do in Britain?
I think it just, I mean, you do get sitcoms that go for longer, but I think at that point it just fizzled out and Edgar was keen to do a film and Simon and Edgar, you know, wanted to do Shaun of the Dead. So we were offered that option, so we went that way.
And were you now a sort of an established actor to a certain degree? Or?
No, I went back to waitering after the first series of Spaced because I'd, you know, come in from a place where I never had money. When someone then gave me, I don't know what the figure was, someone gave me like $6,000 to do Spaced. It was like, that went in 8 weeks.
Right.
You know, I just spunked it up the wall.
Right.
And 8 weeks later, I came to literally mopping the floor at 1 a.m. in a different restaurant. Just kicking myself saying, you fucking idiot, why did you do that? But I'd never done that again, you know, that was my lesson in terms of financial nous.
You blew the money and what, you lost your job at Chiquito's?
I left it, I burnt my bridges, it was like, I felt like Homer Simpson saying, I'm never coming back, I'm going to be, you get
me? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, just...
And then after the first season, or does it...
Yeah, I was back to waitering in a place called Old Orleans.
Yeah.
And the tagline was, a taste of the deep south.
Oh boy.
Terrible.
I like that you at least went with strange kind of North American ethnic cuisines.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have New Orleans and they have Mexico.
I'm a soul food kind of, you know, any place that does gumbo and jambalaya, I'll be working there.
So you're working there and then when you got the second season, did you tell them to fuck off?
Yeah, I was off. Yeah. And then it started to pick up, you know, I started to do little bits and pieces and you know.
But most of it with Simon or you were doing other stuff too?
Well, most of my acting was with Simon and Edgar at that point, but I'd done other little bit, you know, I was doing a sketch show at one point and
a lot
of that thing where you're kind of sitting on a panel and talking about current affairs with a comedy slant, you know, that kind of.
Oh, you were with that guy? The big funny guy?
Panel guy, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Panel show guy.
And
it was fun. It was good. I did a couple of seasons of that thing, and I did some presenting, and I did a show called Danger 50,000 Volts,
yeah,
which I loved. We did 2 seasons of that, and I was essentially playing a character of it was a bit like Mike Watt.
Uh-huh.
And we did a lot of work here in the States, but it was, what if you're attacked by an alligator? Why do you get out of it?
Yeah.
It was that kind of thing.
But it was real.
It was real, right. Yeah. I ended up
talk
in
to
Florida.
Experts.
Oh. Yeah, yeah. A lot of ex-military... I ended up wrestling an alligator in Florida and it almost breaking my arm. I got into a boat crash in Florida and was hospitalized.
Florida's a dangerous place.
I never go. I don't go back.
No, because of those horrible memories?
Yeah. Edgar, he sent me an email a few weeks ago and on it was, I don't know where it was from. It was from something over here. And it was every state in America and it was number one torrented film in each state. Cuban Fury was the most torrented film in Florida.
And that what was it? What movie was that?
Cuban Fury. I did a dance film like last year, where I played a Cuban salsa champion. And it was the number one torrented film in
the most highly stolen movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought, God, I wish he'd paid. It did like $100,000 over here in the box office. But I was weirdly proud of it.
Why wouldn't you be?
Yeah.
You're a cult sensation.
I wouldn't have to pay for another drink in Miami in the Cuban quarter.
You got to go down there.
Yeah.
What was it? Was it an over-the-top, you know, hilarious character that you were doing?
No, it was a man who was down on his luck. Predictably, you know, a bit broken. He was a champion dancer when he was 12, and then he got essentially beaten up by bullies, and he turned his back on the world of Cuban salsa.
Uh-huh.
And then, like, 20 years down the line, he's a bit of a sad sack, and this woman, Rashida Jones, comes to work in his office, and he falls in love with her, and he finds out that she dances salsa, so he finds his old teacher again to try and get him to learn all the new moves.
Did you learn?
I did. I trained for 7 hours a day, 6 days a week for 7 months.
And can you do it?
I can, yeah. That's something I'll never lose now.
Do you do it for fun now?
I do, yeah. I was out a few weeks ago.
But now, okay, so the big movies you did with Simon.
Yeah.
You did Shaun of the Dead. And then you did, what was the other one?
Hot Fuzz.
The next one. That was a good one. I watched them all. And I watched, I had World's End.
And we did Paul.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I don't know if I saw that one.
So they're with a little alien. They have to get the alien back.
Oh, okay.
And me and him play comic book nerds.
Yeah.
And we hire an RV and we treat ourselves by we go to Area 51 to see what it's all about. And while we're there, we bump into an alien who has escaped from the facility and we have to drive him up to Devil's Tower.
To get him home. So a little E.T. riff. Did Edgar direct that one?
No, that was lovely Greg Mottola, who did Superbad.
Oh, okay.
Who's a mate of ours, and he did that, which was amazing. I got to live in Santa Fe for like 5 months.
I grew up in New Mexico.
I liked it a lot.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
Too much Amber and Dreamcatchers for me. But
that's Santa Fe.
That is Santa Fe.
I grew up in Albuquerque.
A lot of ex-astronauts wandering around and... You know, Neil Young had come into town.
A lot of ex-everythings with money end up there.
David Byrne would drift through town at some point doing acoustic sets.
Yeah, it's weird, right?
Yeah.
Because it's a little town. It's a little town.
It is.
Did you go to Tia Sofia's and have the blue corn enchiladas or Pasquale's?
I think there were tons of places.
Beautiful, right?
Green or red?
Yeah, exactly.
Christmas.
That's a big question in New Mexico.
Yeah.
I'm a green guy, mostly.
Yeah, I am as well.
Enchiladas, I'll have red.
I had the slowest getaway from a club while I was in Santa Fe. Me and my wife went to this. We went to the state fair where we witnessed mutton busting.
I don't even know what that is.
Kids ride sheep.
Oh, okay.
As if they're riding bulls.
Right. Training for a horrible life.
Pre-bull.
pre-bull training.
Pre-bull at this point.
Yeah.
And then, like, weirdly, we ended up in some techno club.
Yeah.
And a local drug dealer took offense at the fact that I, like, wouldn't have a drink with him. And he kind of started to get a bit angry at me. And he got to a point where he was like, you better have a drink with me because you're just being rude now. I was like, to my wife, let's have a drink. And like we had a drink, but we sat there in stony silence. Like he didn't have anything, but he kind of wanted to be seen in the club hanging out with the Shaun of the Dead guy. And so I ended up saying to my wife, why don't you just go to the toilet? Just walk away, go to the toilet. And so she went to the toilet and I kind of did a thing. And I said, I'm just going to go to the loo. And then we ended up kind of me and her outside.
Yeah.
Just panicking. This guy's going to fuck us up. And there was like a rickshaw outside. Do you know what? the bikes?
Sure.
And you sit in the back.
Yeah,
And I said, just get in. Let's go. And me and Chris got in this rickshaw.
Yeah.
And it was like a 19-year-old girl who was obviously like a ladies' soccer major or something.
Right.
And I said, let's just go. And we made a getaway
at like one
mile an hour.
Yeah. Did the guy come out?
No.
Oh, good.
Well, that's good. We were in view of the club for an hour. So... he would have seen us.
My buddy Dave really liked the hyperdrive. He misses
that. Oh, cool.
I didn't know about it, but he's like, oh, it's great. I love it. How many of those did you do?
We did 2 seasons, so 12.
Yeah.
It was good, man. I really enjoyed it. I mean, I like science fiction anyway, so having to...
Were you always a nerdy guy? Because you don't strike me as a nerdy guy.
I lived a double life. I was a jock by day.
Yeah.
And then at night, I'd come back and read 2000 AD and...
So you all have that in common, you and Edgar and Simon.
Yeah.
I
think where they were lucky and fortunate is they got to embrace theirs a lot earlier than me. You know,
right.
I had to kind of keep mine hidden.
Yeah, you were a closet nerd.
I was a closet nerd, and it was only when I met Simon, really, that became...
You were able to embrace it?
Yeah, absolutely, you know, and think about films as being a cinema, you know. And,
right.
And think about intertextuality and the fact that I'd heard a riff from a soundtrack in a different film. You think, I know what that is, you know, that...
Yeah, yeah.
That thing, I'd never thought about that before. I knew how I felt, but I never knew there were words for it. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, because Edgar's sort of a sophisticated sort.
Yeah,
he's a real film head.
Yes,
and you know, all the sort of weird genre play you guys did in Spaced was so that was all sort of mind blowing to you.
Yeah, I mean, it was like, well, this is what we do at home. You know, this is what me and Simon do every day. You know, I used to do lots of different sound effects of firearms. That was part of Mike Watt's initial kind of MO, that he could kind of do every firearm. And so that kind of slow motion gunfight was stuff that me and Simon would do anyway, you know.
Just sitting around the house?
Yeah, I'd come in one day to Simon and I'd say, this is the flat hollow boom of a shotgun. You know, and
right.
I'd ratchet it up. And
yeah, yeah, yeah. In terms of making movies with Simon and Edgar, you're a producer now a lot of times?
Yeah, I produce Cuban Fury and I produce World's End. And
how was that job? I mean, how did you come into that job? What does it entail, really?
You know, I think it's about just having that official stamp that you have a voice, essentially.
Right.
You know, I think during Shaun of the Dead, and certainly not so much Hot Fuzz, but, you know, I was kind of young to all this and new to it all, and I think I was very aware of my place in the food chain, and even though it was the three of us making films, I was acting in those jobs, you know, but I did have a kind of voice, and they would always let me, you know, hammer the script for notes, and then they take those into consideration, or they don't take them, you know.
Right.
But then, obviously, the more and more we did together, after Hot Fuzz, it was... And World's End was saying, I kind of was confident enough to say, I'd really like to produce this with you guys.
Yeah.
And it was, it was cool.
So you're like a guy now. You're a show business guy.
Yeah, now I'm a showbiz guy.
It's an amazing story.
Yeah, I guess.
You still don't consider it? You know, I mean, I know you only go a couple of years back and you don't look back much, but aren't there moments where you're like, holy shit.
Yeah.
I was thrown out of England.
Yeah, well, I was asked to leave.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, I was kind of approached recently by a publisher to say, would you ever write a memoir? And so I'm not sure. I mean, I've sat down for 5 months and I've written one, and I'm like, I'm 23 and I've written 190 pages of
really?
A story. So I don't think I am going to do it, but I enjoyed sitting down and doing it for myself. You know, it's kind of interesting.
Oh, right, to engage the memories.
Yeah.
And see the journey.
Yeah.
What? Why are you apprehensive about doing it? Because of that that area that...
you know, I think I wanted to write the whole thing and then take out everything I wouldn't want anyone to know and see what would be left.
Right.
See if there would be an amusing story there, you know.
Without the embarrassing parts.
Shit.
Yeah. but that's what people want. They want the shit.
Yeah. Yeah, but see, there's a weird thing in our culture today is that I'm not sure people are ready for that shit. You know, what they want is a story about meeting Quentin Tarantino or me and Bill Hader hanging out together, or people want that. What they don't want is those... Maybe what the publishers don't want are those very interesting autobiographies of the 70s and 80s by people who lived a life, and, you know, that's what I want to read about.
Right.
But that's not necessarily...
Right. The ones who barely made it out but are now... They're now big and old and rich enough to not care.
And they had an amazing life.
Sure.
You think, Jesus Christ.
Well, it sounds like you had one.
That happened to you, yet still you survived and thrived, you know.
Of course they want that. You don't think they want that?
No.
Well, did you meet Quentin Tarantino?
I did, yeah.
How was that?
Amazing. Yeah, I've met him a bunch of times.
Yeah, is he a fan?
Yeah, he has a picture of me and Edgar and Simon in his cinema.
Uh-huh. When you go out for other directors and stuff, what would you like to do at this point? Okay, let's have a general meeting now.
Okay.
It's so nice to see you finally.
Hello.
Yeah, I really
I became that guy.
Yeah,
hello.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hello, you.
Enjoy your work.
Thank you.
Love, Simon.
What?
Edgar was just here yesterday.
Uh-huh.
Good friends of yours. So what do you want to do?
I don't know. I'm not really bothered. What you got? I went into a meeting years ago.
Yeah.
It was like the first time I'd done Generals after Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah.
And I had a meeting with... I think it was Amblin or It's one of those guys.
Was that Spielberg's old company?
Yeah, it was one of those, you know, it was quite a big deal. Yeah. And I was terrified and it was hot and I was sweating. And I turned up 3 minutes late and then they kept me waiting for a while to punish me.
Right.
And then they said, you know, you can go in and this lovely girl kind of showed me into the office. And there was a woman sat behind a big desk in quite a dark room, kind of lined with rich mahogany or sequoia.
Uh-huh.
And she did that thing where she just pointed at a chair and she didn't look up.
Yeah.
And then she stopped after a couple of minutes and she looked at me. I mean, she really looked at me. And then her thing, she said to me, I got three words for you. Shrek on Broadway. And she actually, she put her chin on her...
On her fist
to underline the fact she'd finished talking.
Yeah.
And that, you know, I think that says a lot about me. I was like, I actually remember saying to her, what else have you got on your slate? Like I'd heard someone say slate in an office.
Take your head off your fist and give me some other options.
Yeah, all right, chin fist. Take your,
Well, yeah, they were trying to cast that. They thought you were the guy, huh?
I mean, I guess the criteria for that is he big?
Right.
Can
he dance? Can he sing? Not that.
Is he fat?
Yeah.
Is he Shrek-shaped?
Yeah. And you said, thank you.
Yeah. Anyway, thanks for seeing me.
Yeah. Well, do you have some things you want to do?
Well, I've written a kid's thing, which I want to turn into a graphic novel. I've just met a really amazing artist called Rebecca Foster, and I think she's keen to illustrate it for me.
And you do a lot of voiceovers as well, don't you?
I do voiceovers, yeah. And, I mean, I just want to make good things with good people.
Right.
I've written a wrestling film.
Oh, that'd be good.
I think we're going to try and get that off the ground.
Are you a wrestling fan?
I am a wrestling fan. I like a bit of rough and tumble, and I'd like to do all the wrestling myself. So,
oh, that'd be great.
I need to put a cap on it in terms of... Yeah, I think I'm 42 now. I think 45, and that's when you start getting spines busted.
And you gotta find another guy that looks like you to take the hit.
Yeah, maybe the guy who's playing Shrek at the moment on Broadway.
I don't think it lasted long. He's probably looking for work.
Yeah,
they cast a guy who turned out not to be the right guy, who I know, but they already did the contract with him, so he got paid out for it.
Oh, nice!
But he wasn't even the dude.
I think it's now probably so you could go and see it in Atlantic City.
Sure,
it's that kind
of. It's always on Broadway in Atlantic City.
Yeah,
yeah. And what did you and Simon do? What are we doing with this Shaun of the Dead revisiting? Is that happening?
What for Phineas and Ferb?
Yeah, what is that?
Yeah, it's a cartoon that I've seen it a couple of times, but I know the guys and they're lovely. But they've written us in as Shaun and Ed for the like the Halloween special. I mean, I think we're in it for like 60 seconds.
That's it?
Yeah.
And when you go back, where you go back to? Where are you living?
I live in the southwest of London, a place called Twickenham.
Yeah.
It's very beautiful. The Thames flows through it.
Oh, that's nice.
And it's famous for having the world's biggest rugby stadium. And it's the headquarters of English rugby. And so like 16 times a year, we have 100,000 lunatics descend on our small town to go and watch rugby.
Do you go?
I don't. I get a lot of hassle from being in the films that I've done. I get, you know.
Oh, you can't get through the crowd.
No, I mean, literally everywhere I go, people stop me and want photos. And
isn't that weird? It's like the new autograph. Autographs, I think, were even more daunting. Photos, it's almost too easy because they can just sort of like
to them.
You just we're just holding you, and then they. Do you do it?
Yeah, I'm always course. Lovely. Right, I mean, I'm chuffed to bits, really. I'm thrilled that someone would give a shit that I'd done anything that would mean that they would want a photo.
Are you upset, though, that you can't go to the rugby games?
Not really. I mean, I've always had... I think this comes from being a kid and trying to get into those thick-fisted Irish bars and seeing all the fucking hassle between groups of massive groups of men. It put me off being with massive groups of men.
Yeah, I can't deal with this.
I'm not a fan of that at all. I'd rather just be a few of us and...
Yeah.
You know, even stag nights bother me.
I'd
rather be with... I'm a girl, man. I like hanging out with girls.
Yeah? Oh, really?
Yeah. That's I like fun. Girls. I'm good with girls.
I just like one or two people.
Yeah. Okay?
Once there's three, it's like, who's that guy?
Yeah. Well, you should go.
You too many.
I didn't make enough for you.
Yeah, party's full. It's just me and these other two fellas.
Yeah.
Well, it was great talking to you, Nick.
Hey, listen, thank you for having me.
Yeah, and so now, well, Simon's in Morocco.
Yeah.
Texting you.
Yeah. From the Quail Quarter.
What was the last thing he said to you?
I just had a hawk on me or something like that.
Do you get that a lot? Does he send pictures and stuff?
Oh, we send so much shit to one another.
That's,
you know,
sweet. All right, he's a great guy. I'm glad you got good friends.
Yeah.
You've done great things. Thanks, man.
Thank you.
Well, that's it. Wait, I love talking to that guy. What a funny guy. Nice guy. Happy for his success. Look, folks, go to WTFpod.com for all your WTF Pod needs. Get some merch. Pick up the app if you don't have it. We've got about 500 and God knows how many episodes. The most recent 50, always free. All episodes free for up to 6 months. Then you got to get the premium app. So you download the free one, upgrade to premium for a few bucks, and you can stream all of them. Going to restock the merch for Christmas. I should probably make a new shirt or something. Something. Oh, did I mention that Fences wore his own handcrafted Boomer Live shirts on the Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon? That was exciting. I guess I should talk to that guy at some point. I have to get into what he does. It's not that I'm not interested in things. It's a lot of times I just don't make time for them. I guess that would be sort of similar to not being interested. Would it not? Yes, it would. I'm working on it. I'm telling you, man, going to go into music. Yeah, because there's always room for a, you know, 50-year-old mediocre blues player. Big market. Boomer Lives!